Let's do it sequentially to make sure we haven't forgotten anything. So let me read these topics once again sequentially, and let's see if there are any questions. Gates and Boolean algebra. So you need to know about the gates and Boolean algebra. That means you need to know about Boolean, you need to know about De Morgan's theorem, and you should be able to show that things like AB bar plus AB is equal to A. You should be able to prove that, right? And you should be able to prove things like this. And other things like this, which are part of the Boolean algebra. You should be able to simplify Boolean algebraic expressions. And functional blocks, decoders, multiplexers. So if I say that there is a decoder, and let's say it has two select lines and four outputs, then if the select lines have these values, which output will be selected? And for multiplexer, if I say that this is a multiplexer, and which has these inputs coming in. So if you have a multiplexer, you have the select line. Now this is how they are drawn in the book. And here you have some values. Let's say here you have values. Let's make it easy. Okay. I guess I can call them A and B. So I could ask a question like this. If you want the output to be equal to A, what should be the bit on the select line?
Zero.
And now obviously should be zero, right? You should also know how a multiplexer would look like. So I could ask you to draw a diagram of a multiplexer that selects one bit from two bits. So you should be able to give a diagram of this in a simple case when these are just a single line. But if I give you I guess you should be able to do it for any size, but I would guess that in an exam, I would probably keep things of sizes which are not too big. Two-level PLAs and ROMs. So you should be able to design using full errors. So I could tell you that here is a set of interconnected full errors that form a parallel binary error. And these are full errors. And if I give you the lines, if I give you the values on the input lines, you should be able to find out what will be the outputs and what would be the values on these carry lines. Questions on this? So you should be able to fill in the values there. PLA minimization. Now, if I give you a truth table, and you have to implement that using a PLA, and you have to have the PLA minimized, would you first use the Carnot maps and get a PLA table and then minimize it, or would you first directly get a PLA table and then minimize the product terms? In other words, if you want to minimize the PLA, do you need to first go through a Carnot map minimization?
That is right. You don't need to do a Carnot map minimization. And the reason is that you will be doing minimization of the product terms by checking to see if two product terms can be merged, or sometimes four. And so there's no point in doing a separate minimization. In fact, it is possible in some cases that you might do a Carnot map minimization, and that may not result in the best answer, because you may already do some combinations and you may not be able to see the possibility that you can minimize some product terms in your PLA. So basically, in PLA minimization, your objective is to minimize the product terms. Delays in synchronization. So you should know about propagation delays, and you should know about the use of the clock and flip-flops. I guess you should know what the flip-flops are. We didn't talk about how the flip-flops themselves are constructed. Now, you have probably seen something like that before, maybe some simple implementation. And there are other implementations also. So we basically didn't worry about it. We just assumed that we know that there's a flip-flop which we have to use as a design element. So if you have to talk about flip-flop as a design element.
Did we only cover, did we do D flip-flops, or did we do like SR and JK?
We only talked about D flip-flops. So if you know about any other kinds of flip-flops, try not to think about them. Because we didn't do any other kinds of flip-flops. Did you do other flip-flops?
Well, I mean,
Depending on, I guess if you are an electrical engineer, then you have to know about other kinds of flip-flops, but we have simplified things, and we are using only D flip-flops. And D flip-flops are good enough for just about everything that we will do. Question?
I have a question about
okay.
How can we minimize the delay?
Oh, propagation delay. Actually, that's a good question. Now, we have seen a simple approach for estimating propagation delay. So we say that if a signal has to go through a certain number of logic levels. So let us see, let's assume that we are considering this. So here we have two levels of logic. And let's assume there are no inverters, or inverters don't have any propagation delays. And let us say that this has maybe certain amount of propagation delay. Let's assume, how much should we assume? Now what kind of propagation delays we should expect these days?
Picoseconds,
yeah. That's a good answer. So pico is, how much is pico? 10 raised to
12.
Minus 12, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, so basically with, okay, you should be able to figure this out. If I say that you are using a processor with a certain frequency, you should be able to calculate the clock period. So for example, if I say that you have a 1 gigahertz, how much is 1 gigahertz? And that is 1 multiplied by 10 raised to, we have megahertz, and then we have gigahertz.
So that raised 10^9, right? So if you have 1 megahertz clock, then your clock period is equal to, and this is of course cycles per second, and the clock period would be 10^-9 seconds, and that is 1 nanosecond.
You want us to take it all the way down to nanosecond?
You mean propagation delays?
Do you want the answer in nanoseconds, or can you just say 10 minutes?
Well, in many cases I will accept either of them, but I do expect you to know this. So if I say give the answer in nanosecond, and if you don't give this, then we have to take some points off, because we expect you to know that what is a nanosecond and so on. So if we specifically ask you to say how many nanoseconds, then answer has to be in nanoseconds. So I was coming back here. So let's assume that the delay here is maybe 0.1 nanoseconds. And this is 0.1 nanoseconds. Then what is the maximum delay that would be encountered when signals pass through the circuit? And delay through here is 0.1 nanoseconds. And what is the maximum propagation delay? How many of you say 0.3 nanoseconds? Okay, how many of you say 0.2 nanoseconds? Okay, I guess that is the right answer. So remember, signals here and here, they are traveling in parallel, so there is no extra time. But anything that is sequential, that you have to pass through one after the other, then of course propagation delays add.
Don't we also have to take into account what the load is? I mean, if I had that AND gate driving a load of 50, my propagation delay is going to be longer.
Okay, so the question is, now this is the approximation we will use in this class. And of course, you know, you can always have more precision and more detail. So that's actually a good point, that if you look at electrical characteristics, then you will find that propagation delays depend on a number of things, including how much load you have on a certain line. So if you have on a line, if you have a lot of load, and so the load would depend on how many other devices it is driving. Or load could depend on, if you have output of a pin which is going outside of the chip, then you have a higher load there. So whenever you have higher load, propagation delays are higher. But that is, let's leave that for electrical engineers. So, any electrical engineers here? There are some, right?
As long as we're within the fan-out limit for the AND gate.
And there's generally there's a linear relationship between fan-out and propagation delay. But, and in fact, if you have an industrial strength simulator, so I think our simulator is not quite industrial strength logistic. But if you have an industrial strength simulator, it will automatically take into account this linear relationship between fan out, number of lines a certain output is driving, and the propagation delay. So basically, we will, in this course, largely think in terms of number of levels of logics that need to be traveled, and we will take that to be an indicator We will regard that to be an approximate indicator of the propagation delays. And flip-flops. So you should be able to design using flip-flops. For example, you should be able to design finite state machines like we have. Registers. You should be able to, now a register can load information in parallel. We have seen that. So if you have a register, now a lot of times you will show a register in this way. Sometimes we might show individual inputs. For example, we might show that, okay, this is a 32-bit register, but sometimes it is too cumbersome to draw each line, so we will show the lines collectively. And this register will load information in parallel. Now we have talked about shift registers, which loads information one bit at a time. We talked about memory addressing. In MIPS, you address each successive byte. In other words, each byte has an address. So a word actually occupies four addresses. And we talked about RAM chips. And again, we didn't look at internal architecture of the chip. We didn't talk about it too much. Again, that is something that if you are interested, you can find that in the literature. But we have kind of left it for the electrical engineers to worry about that. We looked at finite state machines, analysis and design and behavior. Use of a circuit simulator. So you should be able to do that. You should know how simulators work. RISC and CISC processors. You should know what is special about a RISC processor. And we talked about the MIPS registers. We have 32 registers, so-called general purpose registers. Register 0 is actually special. Register 31 is special, because it saves the return address. And many of the other registers are dedicated. Instruction formats and instruction fields. So you should be able to, if I give you an instruction, add this and this, or load from memory and things like that, you should be able to convert that from assembly to binary. Or if I give you binary, you should be able to translate it back into assembly language. You should be able to look up information on this card.
So we allow that card to look
up. What's that?
You can bring that card up.
Yeah, bring the card. Bring the card, but you cannot write anything on this card.
That card has the instructions and what they mean in binary, etc.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So you should be able to look up information on this card. So if you have not been using this card, make sure you are sufficiently familiar with it. And you should be able to use it for this. We talked about addressing modes. So you can address the operands using a few different modes. We have talked about that. We talked about big endian, little endian. Okay,
MIPS, is it big endian or little endian? It's kind of unclear because it can be set to be either.
DEC used it one way and SGI used it the other way.
Right. That's true. So, but you should know that big endianness and little endianness that is there, which sometimes you have to worry about. If you are only if everything that you are doing is word sized, then you don't need to worry about it. But if there's something that sometimes you're using 32-bit things, and sometimes you want to go in there and pick out individual bytes, then you need to worry about whether something is organized in a big endian way or a little endian way. Incidentally, does anyone know where these terms came from? Big endian, little endian? How many of you have read Gulliver's Travels? So, which is actually supposed to be a children's book, but actually it was not written. It was written to be a political satire. I think it was written in 18th century in England. So it's actually supposed to be a political satire. So there are these two groups of people who fight with each other, and the main difference between these two groups of people is that one, the big endians, they break the egg one way, and little endians, they break the egg the other way, and they of course disagree violently about which is the right way to do it, which is actually fits quite nicely with the discussion that happened in the early days of computer architecture. People argue this is the better, this is the better way, or this is the better way. Actually, it doesn't matter. As long as you know which particular way things are, you just work with it. Instruction assembly, load and store instructions. So you should be able to do these load and store instructions. You should know what they do, that they move information from here to here, how the addressing works. And you should know about the computational instructions, add, subtract, immediate instructions, and so on. So you should be able to figure out, if I give you that, this is the instruction, this is what you have in the register. So after the execution, what will you find in whatever in the destination register? So things of that type, you should be able to do that. So questions? Multiple choice. Yeah, I think probably the questions will not be multiple choice. In most cases, they will be kind of specific answer. Multiple choice takes too much paper. So, and multiple choice tests are harder, right? Multiple choice questions are harder. Anyone agrees with that?
No.
No?
One of the answers is in front of you. Well,
it depends on how tricky it is.
Because questions to be good multiple choice questions, several of the questions should sound like the right answer. Because if I make things too obvious, then there's no point of having the question. So multiple choice questions are not always easy. But anyway, they take too much paper, so probably we may have maybe one or two, but mostly you will have to give a specific answer. So sometimes you may have to fill in the blanks. So you have to do something, and for convenience, I will provide you blanks. So you could be questions of that type. Okay, so I will see you on Thursday. And if you haven't taken the quiz, I think still you have a little bit of time. No, that was just a special case. So usually, if I give you one sum of product form, you cannot get product of some form immediately. So, but that was a special case. Yeah.
get a question. I'm having trouble reading that little green one.
Oh,
I wonder if I can make it bigger. It's the same one, I just made it bigger.
Okay, yeah. So just tell us in the beginning that...